I had toyed with the idea of wearing a tie this morning. Because obviously if you were here last week, and even if you're here today, you can see JJ is in a suit. But even the thought of a tie made me hot. And the thought passed quick. I was hot just sitting back there this morning, and so I passed on the tie. I want you to know that I have a challenge this morning that is not a challenge that was of my own doing. I was approached by one of our young folks that said, I have a couple of complaints, essentially. One, you speak too long. And two, it needs to be funny. I wasn't sure that I could manage on either front, but we'll do our best at least to hit one, Gretchen. She did say that I should try dancing, maybe the floss. See? I had to ask her for a couple I didn't know. She said, well, there's the sprinkler. Kenzie said, there's the cabbage patch. I had to ask that one. Did you know it was the cabbage patch? The seems like it's a stirring kind of a song. I'm not sure. I think what I can give you that will be helpful, maybe, is we'll do some pictures. And hopefully pictures will count sort of as a cartoon maybe in some way. But she's also in a hard spot because the Wednesday night class has challenged them to keep notes on the sermon. So as much as I've been challenged, then they've been challenged also. And I'm not sure that I'm going to do her a lot of favors in terms of the structure for today, but we'll see how it goes. I was debating how I would start, and I think this is how we'll go, is I was browsing Facebook, as you're prone to do once in a while, and came across a job posting. Now, the job posting was not because I was looking for a job. I want to be clear about that up front. And it also was only in there through sort of the algorithms that Facebook has because someone else had commented on it, and that person was a graduate of Harding, and because I'm a member of a group that's affiliated with folks that went to Harding, that popped up in my feed. I have to say that for me, I don't know, probably most people in here have not spent any time looking at a job description for a church. This was a church looking to hire a lead pastor for their congregation. They had been through some changes, were looking to hire a pastor, and had posted in all the avenues that they knew to post, including social media, of course, being one that you can spread just by virtue of people's contacts. For me, reflecting on that posting, because I have been in those searches in the past. I've been a youth minister, a family minister. I've been a pulpit minister in some different environments. And on occasion, I've obviously been looking to step into new roles. And so I've been exposed to those. For me, this particular one was from the Sugar Grove Church of Christ, which is southwest of Atlanta. So southwest corner of Atlanta. Well, not really a corner to Atlanta. Houston. Not really a corner to Houston. Super large city that keeps on growing and swallowing the adjacent cities. Sort of in between Sugar Land and Katy, if you're familiar with that side of Houston. Best search I've ever seen, in my opinion. I encourage you, if you have the time, to go look at it. You can go to their website. And what you'll find if you go to their website is a 17-page document, a PDF that they've put together that describes all the demographics of their community, who they represent, who they're trying to reach, and it gives some descriptions about who they are as a church family and what they're looking for in a pulpit minister. Now, I can almost certainly assure you that you may not like everything that you see or agree with everything in there, and that's not the point. But the other piece that they did is they have a video that's just under 9 minutes, 8 minutes, 47 seconds, if I remember right, that was put together by the search team. The elders said, we know we need this. We don't think we have the bandwidth as the shepherds of this congregation to undergo this kind of a search. We want to find some folks within this congregation to be representative of who we are as a family. and put together a video for us telling folks who we are. And so on that video, the search team introduces themselves one at a time. And so you get the first individual, you get the children's minister, the youth minister, different folks that are a part of this search team, explaining who they are, how long they've been at the church, ranging from, I think the children's minister at the time of the video been there days, whereas one of the other individuals on the search team, I can't remember her role, she'd been a part of that congregation for 37 years. And so a broad spectrum representing who they are, but so well done. And the reason I mentioned that search to you is because it reminded me of a similar church that was looking but had a reputation for disqualifying virtually every applicant based purely on how they read and interpreted their resume. Not even a Zoom or Teams video kind of conference, not even a phone call, just resume, no good. And would eliminate virtually every candidate. And so one of those decided that they would try a new tactic. Instead of writing a resume, write more of a cover letter giving a description. That maybe that would make some difference describing their background. And so here's how the letter goes. Dear church members, I'm writing to apply for the position as your pastor. My experience is more along the lines of a traveling evangelist, but I believe I could fill your position adequately. I've never attended any Bible college, seminary, or preacher training, school per se, and don't have a formal degree, but I do have a lot of real-world experience, field-based experience. Although I don't have any accolades or diplomas hanging on my wall, that's due in part to the fact that I don't have a wall to hang them on. I've traveled around most of my adult life renting and doing odd jobs to support myself, preaching wherever I could. Churches in the streets, even in prison a few times. I never really was able to stay in one place long enough to put down roots and own my own house. Who knows? Maybe this position could change all of that. To be honest, as much as I enjoy the freedom that comes with travel, it's not always as free and easy as you might think. Even the travel part has been more difficult than I thought, and I count myself fortunate to have survived a few accidents along the way. In fact, I'm certain had I not learned to swim as a child, I might have drowned as a result of at least one of those accidents. You would think I'd have picked a different line of work by now, or at least more reliable modes of transportation, but something just keeps drawing me back to ministry. The other difficult part about traveling is people don't always take kindly to strangers and folks they don't know. And so, in the past, during my travels, I've been wrongfully accused of some things and had to spend a few nights in jail just because someone was offended by this stranger in one way or another. For some reason, disturbing the peace seems to be an easy misdemeanor charge that can land you in jail without much evidence or a trial of any sort. I normally wouldn't mention my past like this, but I'm sure your background check will reveal that I've gone by two different aliases. And I want to be sure that you know I'm not trying to hide anything. I can and will answer any questions that you have and any concerns. Did you know that, depending on which country you're in, you can actually face corporal punishment and beatings, even without a trial? I managed to survive a few of those, but I'm convinced they've contributed to some of my current health problems. And by the way, can you advise whether this position comes with health or medical benefits? Fortunately, I'm single, and the cost shouldn't be too high for individual coverage. Anyway, I digress. All you need to know about my jail time is that I made the best of those opportunities and formed some bonds I might not otherwise have done. One thing I learned about prison is that many of the folks there don't have much to lose anymore, and they can be brutally honest. When they learned of my preaching ambitions, they told me I was not particularly easy on the eyes. Code for ugly. On top of that, my speaking skills were not that great either. In fact, they'd go so far as to tell me that my sermons were too long. Sounds familiar. And that they've had a hard time focusing by the end. In spite of the above, and regardless of what people might say about my looks, preaching style or ability to get along with people, you should rest assured that I'm reliable, hardworking, have an active prayer life, and a strong relationship with the Lord. I've had some success in bringing people to the Lord during my travels, but I'm sorry to hear every now and again that some of the churches I preached at are losing sight of the message I preached and are fighting among themselves. On the bright side, during my travels, some who actually listened to my message, the words did seem to sink in once in a while, which makes me think my preaching is getting better. Some of those have even become financial supporters of me in my travels. Not all of my friends are jailbirds. I'm not looking to bring record numbers to your congregation every week, nor am I looking to increase your average weekly contributions, or for that matter, make myself rich in being your pastor. But I can assure you that I will preach the word with integrity and without favor, even when I may not feel like it. I look forward to hearing from you regarding my application at your earliest convenience. Signed, the Apostle Paul. We recognize him, I hope, in the modern context of the language that's used, but really as we reflect on the life of Paul and his ministry, Paul was not the greatest preacher out there. Probably for many of our churches today, I imagine that if he were to apply for a job on the basis of his credentials and his record, it'd be a hard no. What I want to do with you in just a couple of minutes... Did I put that thing down? Where did I put it? I got it. We're going to read a text. In some circles, this text is known as the Fool's Speech. It comes from 2 Corinthians chapter 11. We're going to take the time to read the whole chapter, but we're not really going to spend necessarily a whole lot of time because I think that you get where probably we are going with it. And to be honest, it's a little bit of a downer when you read it in some ways. Not necessarily a preachable text as texts go, but we'll give it a shot. This is from 2 Corinthians, again, the whole chapter. He says, I hope you will put up with me in a little foolishness. Yes, please, put up with me. I'm jealous for you with a godly jealousy. I promised you to one husband to Christ so that I might present you as a pure virgin to him. But I'm afraid that just as Eve was deceived by the serpent's cunning, your minds may somehow be led astray from your sincere and pure devotion to Christ. For if someone comes to you and preaches a Jesus other than the Jesus we preached, or if you perceive a different spirit from the spirit you received, or a different gospel from the one you accepted, you put up with it easily enough. I do not think I'm in the least inferior to those super apostles. I may indeed be untrained as a speaker, but I do have knowledge. We have made this perfectly clear to you in every way. Was it a sin for me to lower myself in order to elevate you by preaching the gospel of God to you free of charge? I robbed other churches by receiving support from them so as to serve you. And when I was with you and needed something, I was not a burden to anyone, for the brothers who came from Macedonia supplied what I needed. I have kept myself from being a burden to you in any way, and will continue to do so. As surely as the truth of Christ is in me, nobody in the regions of Achaia will stop this boasting of mine. Why? Because I do not love you? God knows I do. And I will keep on doing what I'm doing in order to cut the ground from under those who want an opportunity to be considered equal with us in the things they boast about. For such people are false apostles, deceitful workers, masquerading as apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself masquerades as an angel of light. It is not surprising, then, if his servants also masquerade as servants of righteousness. Their end will be what their actions deserve. I repeat, let no one take me for a fool, but if you do, then tolerate me just as you would a fool, so that I may do a little boasting. In this self-confident boasting, I'm not talking as the Lord would, but as a fool. Since many are boasting in the way the world does, I too will boast. You gladly put up with fools, since you are so wise. In fact, you even put up with anyone who enslaves you or exploits you or takes advantage of you or puts on airs or slaps you in the face. To my shame, I admit that we were too weak for that. Whatever anyone else dares to boast about, I am speaking as a fool. I also dare to boast about. Are they Hebrew? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they Abraham's descendants? So am I. Are they servants of Christ? I'm out of my mind to talk like this. I am more. I've worked much harder, been in prison more frequently, been flogged more severely, been exposed to death again and again. 5 times I received from the Jews the 40 lashes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was pelted with stones. 3 times I was shipwrecked. I spent a night and a day in the open sea. I've been constantly on the move. I've been in danger from rivers, in danger from bandits, in danger from my fellow Jews, in danger from Gentiles, in danger in the city, in danger in the country, in danger at sea, and in danger from false believers. I've labored and toiled, and I've often gone without sleep. I have known hunger and thirst, and have gone often without food. I've been cold and naked. And besides everything else, I face daily the pressure of my concern for all of the churches. Who is weak and I do not feel weak? Who is led into sin and I do not inwardly burn? If I must boast, I will boast of the things that show my weakness. The God and Father of the Lord Jesus, who is to be praised forever, knows that I am not lying. In Damascus, the governor and the king Aretas had the city of the Damascenes guarded in order to arrest me, but I was lowered in a basket from a window in the wall and slipped through his hands. Not really a preachable text in a lot of ways. You can see in here, there's a sense of satire from Paul, and he's struggling. Because this goes against everything he knows to do as a follower of Christ. But he's doing it in a way that is calling out these so-called super apostles, these other teachers. I listened to, some of you know, I'm a big fan of Randy Harris, former professor David Lipscomb and then ACU, now retired for 3 years, I think. He was assigned this text 1 year as a keynote lecture at Pepperdine. And in the conversations he had with Mike Cope leading up to the lectureships themselves, they found themselves having a conversation about how not to preach this in an angry way, in a self-righteous kind of a way. Randy describes this example of being a professor at Abilene with this assignment every year of teaching undergraduate Bible and religion majors. And what a great pleasure it was to be able to lecture a group of young people who were already in love with Jesus. How hard of an assignment is that? But as he reflected on his responsibility, he said, I realized that my task with those students was to teach them how to understand who Jesus is. Meaning, you can't turn Jesus into who you want him to be. Right? You can't turn Jesus into who you want him to be, what your idea is of who Jesus should be, because Jesus already was a person. That the objective is to understand who he was. Because in understanding who Jesus was and is, will dictate everything else about how we lead our lives and how we do church. In many ways, is the reflection that our class has been doing for several months now from the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7. And if you remember, we started with the end in mind in those chapters, with the last few verses that talk about the foolish man and the wise man. And what Randy is saying here about his students is you have to understand that it is not who you want Jesus to be that matters. Is we have to understand who he really is and live our lives accordingly. And so he shared a funny encounter that I'll relate to you because I thought it was a little bit humorous. Some of you may identify, maybe not, I'm not sure. But he shared an encounter that he said was a first for him. I'm not sure if he ever had another like it, but he got invited to a groom's wedding shower. You don't generally hear of grooms having a wedding shower. Typically, it's the bride. And he said, probably you wouldn't see someone like me at an event like that, and the only reason I was there was because it was my graduate assistant's shower. He registered, even, ahead of the shower. And if you were to guess, you probably would be pretty close. He registered at Home Depot. He said, what's interesting about a groom's shower is that the gift-giving experience and the opening experience doesn't really take that long. They sort of open up the package and it's the pliers. Toss it over. It's a hammer. And they quickly are done. Unlike the traditional shower that we're familiar with, right? Which is the gentle unwrapping of the gift. Maybe sometimes it's a hurried unwrapping. And then there's the exposed sort of presentation and all the room goes, ooh. And it gets passed around for everybody to look at, to hold, maybe to covet. And so that experience probably takes a little bit longer than it does for the men. And so, noting that the time had gone by pretty quick, the host of the event said, let's have an exercise of who has the best story about the most disgusting accident or illness that they've ever had. Probably a pretty interesting conversation. Certainly, as he described sitting in that room, being in a position of sort of amazement as you would hear these stories unfold, saying, how could anybody have a story worse than that or more disgusting than that? But somehow, each individual seemed to have the ability to one-up one another. We're going to do a little bit of that today. Maybe this is a little bit countercultural or against what Paul is advising us in this text. But I have to admit that this is something I've been thinking about for a long time, that I've wanted to do for a long time. And I suspect, or I hope, that we will end up in a place of needing to do it again. Because I can't cover enough as we engage in just a few minutes of bragging or boasting on this church. In some ways, it's my hope that much as that church has that video and presentation and the PDF, that maybe the words that we're about to share together and the images we're about to share would be tools that we would share with someone thinking about, is this the church family for me? Is this a place I want to call home? And so this really is about... Jill asked me before, what's the lesson on today? And I said, well, really, it's about a few of my favorite things. We're sort of doing a little bit of an Oprah today in sharing a few of my favorite things. I'm a little bit hand-tied because I had to dig in some photo archives to find supporting evidence for a few of my favorite things, and not all of that can be found in photo evidence. But I think as we reflect on some of these, I'm hoping that you sitting there versus standing up here, will reflect on some of these same things and say, yes, I recognize that. That's the Tammany Oaks family that I know and love. Because it's tempting. It is tempting to think of what a successful church looks like and be completely misguided. A week or so ago, we shared just a short clip from, I think, Netflix or somebody, Hulu, did a series on Hillsong Church. I don't know if you all have seen it. It is difficult to watch because it is essentially a megachurch imploding on itself as more and more of their underpinnings, their lack of what Paul is talking about here, as more of those things got exposed. The only clip that we shared was at the end of several individuals that have played different roles in that church, one being a former pastor for them and his wife, the other being volunteers in different capacities. And with the exception of the pastor and his family, who are now attending a different church as members, all of the other candidates that were interviewed, in one form or another, can be summed up in what one of the ladies said in her interview, which was, I will never step foot in another church this side of heaven. The damage that can be done by the teaching that Paul is describing here about people that boast in the wrong things is unfathomable and is potentially eternal. And it's our job to make sure that that doesn't happen. And so I want to boast on things that are not maybe the things the church might boast about. You could go just a mile down the road here, and as most of you have encountered on your way home, probably encountered being stuck in a traffic jam that the police are having to direct because the church is so big. They have so many folks leaving at the same time or coming at the same time that they need police to direct traffic. As Paul said in his letter, his resume, that's not our goal. It's not our goal to grow the coffers here at this church. It's tempting to think along those lines, and yes, we want you here in attendance as much as you can be here. We need one another. But we do some great things, and so I want to share what I think, what I've experienced as one of the newer folks as a part of this church, and I'm going to preface this with an apology. And the apology is, again, I couldn't find a picture of all the people I needed to find pictures of to go through what we're about to go through. But I'm hoping that this is just the start and that we get to do this again, and that this becomes content for us that says, this is who St. Tammany is. And so let's get through these because I'm going to fail on my taking it too long. I don't know, again, as we think about our size, what are the odds that as a church family, we would have two men who lead us week in and week out? You know, really what we do, JJ, Ambrose, is maybe sometimes a little bit easier than what they do. This is not just, I'm sure they're waiting for artificial intelligence to get to the point where it'll just slam together a worship service for them, right? But they're not those kind of men. And you'll see we've got Steph up there. I don't know if you were here the Sunday that we had her sign some of the songs. It is amazing to experience worship that is being led both with audio and with signing. It just has a whole added dimension to it that can't be beat. But I wanted to be sure that we recognize these two men, that somehow we find a way every Sunday to be equipped with worship songs that guide our hearts and lead our minds in worship. Somehow they pull it off. And I promise you it's not something that's done in 5 minutes. It is a lot of work. We have some great worship here. And a lot of that is because of their contributions. I actually have two slides on this, because again, I couldn't put enough up here that part of what makes this such a great family is we have some strong women leading us. And the way they lead us first is by serving. All of these are pictures of them serving in one way or another. You've all seen it. I can almost assure you that even just the folks that are on this first page, that everybody in this family, in one way or another, has been directly impacted by an act of service or an act of love by one of those ladies. Again, I go back to, this is the easy part. The speaking is not doing. And what the writer of Matthew reminds us about in the Sermon on the Mount, again toward the end, about the wise man and the foolish man, is not about speaking or studying or thinking. It's about doing. And we have tremendous, tremendous ladies among us that are doers. Again, I've got two slides. I really couldn't fit them all because there's more. I struggled to be honest. I got to tell you, I asked for some pictures from, I didn't tell them what I was doing really. I asked for pictures from Becky and from Bethany. But I went to dig through the archives. It's a great experience. I encourage everybody to do it. Go hop on the page and look through photos. You can go back for decades or for years. Just watching people grow and change physically is amazing. One of those was Luella. Luella, I had such a hard time finding pictures of you because you are generally behind the camera. We got at least three ladies in here, four that are taking pictures all the time, and so they tend not to be in as many of the pictures, but I found those. And as much as we celebrate you and your acts of service, you're pushing it with the Gators outfit this morning. I went to Florida State, so there's just no way that I can root for Florida. I have a hard time rooting for LSU, but in this case, I'll make a pass. But we have some tremendous women among us that do amazing things day in and day out, and a lot of them aren't captured in a picture. They're done behind the scenes, where we can't see, where we can't know about it, but they're doing it. It's one of my favorite things about this church, is that we have so many strong women leaders among us. You know, we are, I like to think, small but mighty. Think back, I had asked for some pictures and we didn't end up getting these or have room to put these in. But those of you that have been members here since this building opened, that was a defining moment for this church family that says we are a church of service. We're here to serve our community. That this building became a station of operations for first aid, for food, supplies, you name it. I don't know how long that was, 4 weeks, months, 1 year, 1 year. That is our DNA as a church family, that we are a church of servants. And again, many of you in this room have been impacted directly in one way or another by somebody coming to help you clean up some debris from a hurricane, or helping you move, or helping you fix something. This is our DNA. We give to our community. We love our community. And we're a light set on a hill. You know, I think a little bit along the lines of Paul in this, when he's describing being beat, being shipwrecked, having a lot of things that fall in the category of maybe bad luck, certainly a lot against him. We've had a lot of people in our church family be sick, struggle in one way or another. And this family has found a way to support like no other. Again, I go back to, if this congregation were 10,000 in membership, how easy it would be to lose those people in the midst of 10,000. But here in our enclave, you can't go unnoticed. And you don't go unnoticed. We want to be a part of your process. And I think for those and some of those that are showing up here, if we ask for their input, they would tell you, yes, part of my healing is because of the family I have, as much as it is from medicine. It's the support and love that they get from you. We find ways to play together and to have fun together, and I think it's important for people to know that if you're going to come and be a part of this church, you're going to be expected to have fun. It's sort of a joke in my house whenever Kenzie leaves to go on some sort of event. As she's going out the door, remember the rules. No smiling, no laughing, and no fun. Because indirectly, what am I doing? I'm reminding her that those are the objectives for the day. That when she goes to where she's going, she needs to smile, to laugh, and to have fun. I really love Bethany's getting ready for Bernie Sanders, or Bernie Sanders getting ready for the video to start. But we engage in a lot of these activities, and I encourage you not to pass them up. We just had our crawfish boil. Everyone gets so involved in that. It's such a great opportunity to connect with one another and to remind ourselves that we are family and that family finds ways to have fun. And this is that kind of a church. I think I may be at my last slide, which is a sigh of relief for the note takers. I debated on this one because they may not want this kind of recognition, but I think it needs to be done. I don't know how long some of you have been members of this church, but one of the first faces we got to know was Bethany and her family, along with, of course, Luella. But much of what happens here happens without us knowing it, as though we did indeed have an automatic system, that we had artificial intelligence, that the randomizer runs through a list and assigns you a task of what you're going to do that Sunday. And, oh, by the way, ahead of that, you're going to get a letter at the beginning of every month. And now there's the taking on of the bookkeeping. You know, I try to think, there's not enough words that we could say about what Bethany does and who she is in terms of this family. Glue is a great example. But I thought of an old example, and then I realized this example may actually be too old, because it's older even than I am, and that's the old telephone operator. Remember when, back in the day, there's a few in here that remember that, right? When you try to make a call, there was a middle person that you got to speak to first. It was the operator. Maybe our equivalent is someone like a 911 dispatcher, right? Who's coordinating all the pieces. Think of the times that you've had to call down the office because you had a need. Either it was a text, a call, an email that went to Bethany because you had a need. Think about how many times you had to do that, and then multiply it by all the folks in this family. That she is like our 911 dispatcher. She only has one squad car. That's Brad. Who is equally an essential part of who we are as a family because of all that they do. Just this week, somebody got a need, if you saw on Facebook, to get an air conditioner installed, and guess who was taking care of business? Right? Because that's the hub of the activity. So I want to end with just a couple of verses. But before I do, I want you to make sure that if nothing else from today, you take an opportunity to recognize one another and say thank you for doing what you do for this church. Because as much as you do it for them, you are doing it for you. And you are doing it for Christ. I've mentioned Matthew before And so we'll read again from it. And I want you to hear these words in the context of what we've shared this morning and who we are. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of God. And lastly, I'll go back to 2 Corinthians. I want you to hear how Paul ends the whole letter. We read a chapter, but I want you to hear these words to the church. Finally, brothers, goodbye. Aim for perfection. Listen to my appeal. Be of one mind. Live in peace, and the God of love and peace will be with you. All the saints send their greetings. May the grace of the Lord Jesus Christ and the love of God and the fellowship of the Holy Spirit be with you all. Thank you.